Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
I'm Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags!
Get on the grid, Sports Grid, Morenci Unfiltered, the podcast. We pick up the pieces following the return of the UFC, UFC 249. We're throwing it down with the best in the business, Joey Bagels, a.k.a. Joey Odessa, stepping up and in. Bano will join us a little bit later on this evening on the podcast. A lot of stuff to get to, a lot of MMA news. We had an epic UFC 249 on Saturday night in Jacksonville. We've got UFC Fight Night on Wednesday night. Anthony Smith takes on Glover Teixeira in the main event. And it was great to have the UFC back. And it was great to have the UFC back without Conor McGregor as well. It was just nice to have a night and a couple of days without Conor McGregor saying or doing something stupid. And, you know, as soon as we give somebody credit, it's always when it comes and bites me in the ass. And, you know, I've been talking recently over the last couple of weeks about how this pandemic has actually been good for Conor McGregor. He's in shape. He's not getting wasted. He's not punching people. He's not impregnating people. He was donating supplies and money to hospitals in Ireland. He did a public service announcement telling people to take it seriously and socially distance. On Saturday night during the card, he said, "I wish everybody the best of luck and I hope everybody's safe." And he's been generally a nice guy over the last couple of months. And he even said that he had to look in the mirror and he's been humbled by some of the things that he said and done. Evidently, that did not last long because Conor McGregor went on a Twitter tirade just as we began taping this podcast, actually. So this is brand new. Before we bring Joey in here, let me just read you what Conor McGregor has tweeted. "Khabib, you're an absolute embarrassment. Scurrying, hiding rat as usual. As I've said many times, and it has been many times, through the pane of glass, it was confirmed what was already known. No comment, LOL. You're an embarrassment to real fighting." It is Tony, Dustin and Tony next when Tony heals, if he does heal. Dustin will beat him, also if changes aren't made, which they won't be. Dustin, although game and in the mix, will be fed to the floor again. Couple of wins there, here, there, then folded in half, rinse and repeat. That's Dustin Poirier's career. And then he goes on to say how he's going to murder Justin Gaethje. "How dare you, Justin Gaethje, talk about my parenting skills?" As evidently Justin Gaethje has said that Conor McGregor is a bad father in the past. He says, "Justin, there's no danger in a man that has huge legs, we all know. Try and dance around what the real threat is here all you want. I'm going to effing butcher you, your teeth. I'm going to put them on an effing necklace. Speak on my skills as a father, you are effing dead," says Conor McGregor. And of course, One last shot. Of course, he's got to call Khabib's manager a terrorist again. Don't you ever say you represent the great nation of the United States of America ever again. No true American would ever speak so highly or allow a convicted member of a jihadi terror cell to represent them. Of course, he also represents Justin Gaethje. Never forget, you're a freaking blind fool, and I'm going to finish the job. And for the record, right before we bring Joey in right now, there are potential odds up already, guys, for these potential fights. And somebody should tell Conor McGregor he lost the first time that he fought Khabib. And the odds makers have Khabib as a massive favorite in a potential rematch. And Conor and Justin Gaethje, kind of a pick'em. In the pick'em range, minus 110, Conor minus 120 or so. But a rematch between Khabib and Conor McGregor, I tell you what, the odds makers are thinking the same thing's going to happen, as Khabib is in the minus 330 range right now. Joey Odessa, who sets number, steps up and in. How you doing, Joey?
What's up today, G?
Well, you know what? I was ready to recap UFC 249, give props to Justin Gaethje and you for cashing the ticket. Gaethje, we hit the over in the fight, but we lost with Tony Ferguson. When it was all said and done, it was like a break-even night for us. A win here, a win there, it would have been a profitable night, but literally it was like a break-even night when it was all said and done. But Conor McGregor, you know, listen, he's a fighter. He wants to get his name in here right now, but he's going to have to wait because the fight up next should be Khabib versus Justin Gaethje, not Conor McGregor. It looks like he's trying to talk his way in.
Yeah, he sounds like he's drunk. You know, behind his keyboard tonight.
He's drinking the proper 12.
You know, yeah, that minus 300 on Khabib is probably a little cheap going by the first fight. You know, take him down, repeat, take him down, repeat, grind him out. I mean, Conor's only got a puncher's chance there. I mean, Gaethje's probably a little bit closer.
Yeah, Gaethje, the preliminary number out there right now, they're just sort of thrown out there. Khabib minus 240. Gaethje plus 205. You agree with that range? Or should Khabib be a bigger favorite?
A little bit tougher fight. I think it's probably closer. You know, I've been riding with Khabib for a while, and it's been working out for me.
Yeah, it's hard to get in front of a fighter that never loses.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not running out to bet against Khabib anytime soon.
Well, I wasn't in a hurry to bet against Tony Ferguson, even though I didn't think he was a lock or anything like that against Justin Gaethje. Something that I was concerned about, and something that I know is a problem for fighters, is overtraining. And I know you brought it up. Yeah, you brought it up. And I was my one concern with and you and I both didn't like him. Remember when he cut weight? Good for you. So you impress people on Twitter. You know, you cut weight for a fight that you're not fighting on April the 18th. It's draining. You said you consistently trained through this. I was concerned about him being a little bit overworked and overtrained. And he looked tired. He wasn't himself.
Dana brought it up. I mean, Dana said that Ferguson looked flat. Not in those words, but said that he looked flat. You know, and he brought up the weigh-in. You train. You know, no two fighters are the same. But, you know, generally speaking, I think you train so that you peak at a certain time. And, you know, I'm sure that the switch of opponents and things like that didn't help him. I mean, preparing for Khabib, you know, against preparing for Gaethje is much different. But, you know, Gaethje came in on short notice, too. A lot of people were banking on, you know, the idea that Gaethje might gas out late. And it was, he had plenty of gas in the tank.
That's what I was banking on. And my bank account got emptied because of it. You know, and even after the first and second round, I thought that Tony Ferguson was an okay spot. I was like, you know what? Gaethje's connected with like 30 bombs here, man, and hasn't knocked him out. It's got to be frustrating a little bit. And I didn't think he was going to be able to keep up the pace that he did. But his conditioning, and Lou thought his conditioning wouldn't be a problem either. He brought the four rounds and he went with Poirier. So we've seen Gaethje go, you know, not often, but we've seen it. And I got to give credit to Gaethje. And I give credit to Gaethje in the big picture, Joey, just in the sense that he had to earn everything that he's gotten climbing the rankings and the ladder. I remember years ago when I lived in Vegas, remember when he was fighting in the World Series of Fighting And Dana White said, oh, yeah, he's 12-0 or whatever, 13-0, but he hasn't beaten anybody. And World Series of Fighting sucks. And, you know, he should go to Bellator before, you know, he even, like, people even talk about him in the UFC. And here he is right now, an interim UFC champion. I got to give him credit. It wasn't handed to him.
Yeah, he looked great. I mean, you can't take anything away from him. I mean, he showed up and he kicked ass. You know, he fought a great fight.
You buy Henry Cejudo, his retirement after the fact, or is this just posturing for money?
Yeah, it's always, you know, what do I say? It's always about the money. I'm sure that he's got a number in his head that he'd come back for. I mean, he caught me a little off guard. You know, I think that, you know, speaking on that, I think Pettis is, you know, while I'm thinking of it, I think Pettis' contract expired. You know, I'm not positive, but it'd be interesting to see what he does. But no, as far as Cejudo, I don't know. I mean, he's done about everything. I mean, Olympic gold, 2 UFC titles, and, you know, he wants to go out on top. You know, some, I guess a couple spots had, did they have Cejudo, or, excuse me, they had Cruz, had it close after the first round. Somebody had posted the in progress. I thought that Cejudo was a bit of a bargain after the first round. But, you know, how about the quick stoppage, you know, or the stop, not the quick stoppage, but just the stoppage. You know, Cruz.
2 seconds left in the round.
You know, how about Cruz saying the referee smelled like booze and cigarettes?
Yeah, number one, listen, cigarettes aren't illegal, Cruz, so he can smell like a Marlboro. And that's not really a problem. Yeah, it's kind of weak of Cruz, isn't it, to throw that out there? Don't you think somebody else would have noticed if the referee was drunk?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I found it funny. I mean, because I think he, you know, I don't think he's just saying it. I think he really, you know, he really believes that shit.
You know, well, listen, it's ridiculous. I hate that when fights are called. It's very frustrating, too, if you have money on a total or you bet on a fight and it stopped like that with a couple of seconds left in a round. The thing is, he has a right to be upset. The fight shouldn't have been stopped. It is what it is. But at the same point in time, he wasn't going to win, right? It's not like you got robbed of a victory or something like that. Hey, I was about to win and I got robbed. It's like, dude, you were getting pummeled, all right? Like the fight was turning in a bad way. And you brought it up, you know, Cejudo often looks, Cejudo looks sort of human in the first round. It's almost like he needs to get hit a little bit and get pissed off and sort of, you know, that button, the switch, so to speak, that those elite champion athletes have. You know, supposedly he wanted $2 million a fight, Cejudo, and he's not going to get that because just the interest isn't there in those weight classes, which is unfortunate. But it's true. He's ran through the gauntlet of everybody. He says, you know, I got nothing to do. I got nothing to prove. I want to leave on top. And as you stated, he's definitely on top. Listen, Khabib says he's the greatest pound-for-pound fighter in the history of the sport with his accomplishments. When you throw in the Olympic gold medal, the 2 UFC championships, it's hard to argue. But it's too bad for him that, as I stated, he doesn't have that sort of, you know, the classic rival to fight all the time. He's beaten everybody, and people don't go as crazy for the lower weight classes, Joey, in the mainstream public.
Yeah, I mean, he's 5'4", you know, and he's not cutting the best promos out there. And like you said, he doesn't have, you know, the competition that he's – I mean, I don't think he'd have lost another round against Cruz if it went 5. I think he was going to sweep the cards, but
– and he probably would have stopped him anyways after. I mean, he has been stopping people. So, and listen, props to Cruz. You know, he shows that he still has something at 35 years old. You mentioned Anthony Pettis, and, you know, listen, I thought I got screwed over, Joey, on the Watterson fight, all right? I mean, come on, man. One judge has it 30-27 Watterson, and another judge has it 30-27 Esparza. It's like they were watching two completely different fights. And then the third judge, of course, the other judge had a 29-28 Esparza. So it is what it is. I'm not saying it was the biggest robbery in the history of the sport or anything. And I always think of what you say. It goes both ways. But I did think I got screwed, and that was a difference between being in a profit and not for me. I broke even. But with that nice plus 126 with Watterson, it would have been a nice score. But that Pettis and Cerrone fight was pretty close. I thought Pettis won, but when they went to the judges' scorecard, Joey, I was holding my breath. I wasn't convinced he won. And he almost looked surprised when they announced that Pettis won. He almost looked relieved and surprised.
You know, I needed Watterson, but I thought Esparza won. And I didn't need anybody in that Pettis fight, but I thought Cerrone edged it out.
So you thought Esparza did enough to win that fight?
You know, not really. I mean, it was just, it depends on what you prefer, what kind of, you know, style you prefer. When I'm scoring rounds, I always try to, you know, give the opposite side, I need the benefit of the doubt. You know, it helps avoid disappointment. I mean, there's three split decisions on this card.
Yeah, I know. And one thing about Waterson, she was good, and she didn't really take that much damage, but at the same point in time, she fought from the outside so much. She was, like, worried about the takedown, so she set up. There was so much distance between her and Esparza, and it came across like Esparza was the one pushing the pace. It, you know, I think that was the difference to me. You know what I mean? And it was bothering me. I was like, you know, get a little bit more aggressive here. You can win the fight, but you've got to lean in a bit here. Because it almost appeared just like Esparza was sort of chasing her all night. And she was smart defensively, but yeah, exactly. And they were talking about her great distance, but like, yeah, she's missing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, she's not going to take it down, but she's 6 feet away from her. Like, she was social distancing. Like, she was socially distancing, Joey, in the cage. Man, Nagano is a freaking monster. I thought Jarezino was dead for a minute. Like, I was like, forget about the virus. I'm like, man, this is bad. I think Jarezino's like in a lot of trouble right now after like Nagano killed him there, Joey. Like, that was a murder job right there.
Yeah, he crushed him. You know, but I still, you know, I can't buy into this whole Nagano boxing thing. A guy like Tyson Fury just would knock his head off.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I agree. Like worry about winning a heavyweight. Worry about the winning UFC belt, bro. As opposed to worry about like heavyweight champions. You've got a strong punch, exactly. Yeah, you got outboxed by Miocic before. You got schooled by him. Like, you know, and listen, you're on a freaking roll right now. You've won four in a row. You know, don't worry about the boxing. You remember last time, Joe, he was fighting against Miocic. You know, listen, it was too fast, too soon for him at the time. I give him credit for bouncing back, especially after the bad loss to Derek Lewis. But I remember at the time when he was fighting Miocic, he was talking about, oh, I want to fight Brock Lesnar. I'm going to beat this guy, and I want to fight Brock Lesnar. He's always worried about things in the future as opposed to getting it done now. You know what I mean? Worry about Cormier now. Worry about Miocic now as opposed to worrying about fighting Tyson Fury or a boxing champion.
I agree. How about Ole and Nick? They tried to rob him, huh? Against Werdum?
Yeah. Yeah, there was the parlay buster, huh? There was a parlay buster.
Yeah, I mean, it looked too easy.
I know. There's always that parlay. There's always going to be one. And that was the one, right? Well, Gaethje won as a dog, but as far as big favorites, the favorites dominated the card. And I got to give the Russian credit, Joey. I mean, man. He came out swinging. It's not exactly known for a stand-up like that. You know, that was a fight, Joey, where if there was one more round, Werdum would have won. He got ambushed early. He hasn't fought in like 2 years or whatever it was. We should have taken that into account more. He hasn't fought in a little while. He was suspended. He kind of looked out of shape. He was slow. He got surprised. Then he started, you know, it was pretty close. But that first round, it wasn't 10-8. They didn't make it a 10-8. But you could have argued it was. He beat the shit out of him in that round.
How about Werdum in the third round, though, you know, on top? I mean, if you had Alexei, how bad of a beat would that have been if he got subbed? I mean, he was in danger a couple times.
He was. Werdum had like 2 minutes, and he had that arm bar going. And Werdum, that's the thing. The Brazilians say, you know, they're very patient, right? So, like, Werdum was, like, not panicking. And he was like, I think I can do this. Like I said, if there was another round, you know, there isn't. There's not four rounds, there's three rounds. So if ends and butts were candies and nuts, we'd all, you know, every parlay would hit. It's not the way it works. But it was a fun fight card. How about that Nico Price and Luque fight? Wow. People, you know, people going into that. Man, that was like the fight of the year.
Well, it worked. You know, this card, they put it together. You know, they bust these guys in, you know, what, one bout before you know, they had him in the on-deck circle. It seemed to work out for him. It, you know, went off without too many hiccups, if any. I thought it
was a great card. Well, listen, yeah, no, the card was great, but we'll see. Listen, Jacare test positive. A couple of his corner guys do as well. We'll see what the ramifications are moving forward. So let's get into the next fight night, UFC on Wednesday night. Bring it.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, we play every day.
all major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
The drill. I am Arenzi. We're throwing it down with Joey Odessa. Babano will step up and in a little bit later on. We're talking about UFC 249 and a massive success. The television ratings. I'm surprised the ratings weren't actually higher. From what I saw 1.2 million. On the prelims, which is pretty good, but I would have expected a little more, but I can't confirm these. I want to confirm the full numbers. I'll keep poking around right now, actually, in a couple of minutes here. But I know as far as a betting handle was concerned, John Anik brought it up during the broadcast, stating that it's the most bet UFC card in the history of the UFC. FanDuel, I know, Joey, tweeted out. They said, we just took more action on any UFC card that since we've been open. And that was at the Pettis Cerrone fight only. So the pay-per-view portion hadn't even started yet, and they had already broken records. The betting number and the betting handles were massive on Saturday night.
It's possible. I think it's probably close. Depends on what a lot of these spots' limits were for these fights. Amount of bets, I think that the bet count might have been higher on some of these previous UFCs. I mean, there's been some pretty big cards going back, you know?
Yeah, the UFC, I was thinking about that, too. I was like, really? I'm surprised. I actually tweeted that after. Well, listen, FanDuel's only been open for 2 years, right? So that's something to take into consideration, Joey, right? Like, they weren't open for UFC 100. Because I was thinking about UFC 100.
That's what I was thinking.
That was pretty big. You know, Lesnar and Mir and GSP and Thiago Alves and, like, Bisping and Henderson. The UFC was sort of at its peak then. That's what I thought, too. I'm like, I don't know. UFC 100 was pretty freaking massive. That, to me, how about the George St. Pierre card in Toronto with 55,000 people, right? Like, there's been some pretty big cards and some pretty heavily bet fights before. But as we stated, a lot of these sports books, Joey, you and I, we were talking offshore and over all these years, right? So now, you know, DraftKings is a new sports book. FanDuel is a new sports book. PointsBet is a new sports book, right? Bet365, not new, but Bet365, new operating in the United States once again, legally, obviously. So, I don't think this card on Wednesday will be as heavily bet. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out and if people eat this one up like they ate it up on Saturday. One thing that was a key, Joey, though, on Saturday – was fighters saying they could hear Joe Rogan and they could hear Daniel Cormier so clearly that it actually helped them adjust during the fights. We've heard this before briefly. Sometimes a fighter will be on a cage right in front of them and the fighter can hear, but usually there's crowd noise and it's not as distinct. But with no one in the arena, they can plainly hear the broadcast going on. And Carla Esparza said it helped her. And other fighters talked about how it helped them as well. Greg Hardy brought it up about checking the leg kicks and how he heard Daniel Cormier talking about he's got to check the leg kick. And it was like advice for him. Interesting dynamic added, Joey.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, it just goes to show how lacking the corners are at some point. If you had the commentators just, coaching these guys through, I mean, how does their corner not see things like that and tell them to check kicks?
Well, listen, I've always said this, and I don't mean this is any disrespect. These cornermen know a hell of a lot more than I do, but manner advice is bad during fights. They always lie to their fighter at halftime, in between rounds, telling them, oh, you're doing great. No, the other guy's tired. He's like, no, he isn't. He's not doing great, and the other guy's not tired. You can't get taken down. The best is when a guy's on his back. You got to get up. You got to get up. Yeah. It's like, he knows he needs to get up, right? It's a little harder when there's a 240-pound dude on top of you. It's easier said. The corner advice I've always thought is really bad, actually. It's a good point.
And then you have Diego Sanchez corner, the elite of the elite, right? What a clown show.
Well, that's Diego Sanchez. I saw was it Ed Herman? Or was it Smiling Sam Alvey, actually? My bad. Smiling Sam Alvey. I think it was him talking about, ESPN and the UFC, they have like a streaming show, sort of like behind the scenes, UFC fighters telling stories about different fights and fighters that they fought. He was talking about how he fought Diego Sanchez. And it was a pretty hostile fight, and there was a lot of blood, and they both went to the hospital. And he said, normally, you get to the hospital, and there's, like, respect. You always see the pictures of fighters and stuff. They'll take a picture of each other in the hospital. They're like, ah, it's all good. And, it's like a badge of honor. He goes, he gets there, and Diego Sanchez, like, attacks him, basically, in the hospital. Like, Sanchez, like, this ain't over, and starts going on. He's like, Sanchez really is a crazy son of a bitch in real life.
Yeah.
Your boy Baroni's got great old school stories like that. Those guys fighting in alleys and stuff.
Yeah, back in the day.
I saw Baroni and Carlos Newton nearly get into it. And they weren't fighting either. It was Baroni that instigated it too. It's funny. I asked Baroni once years later about it. I said, man, you remember that night? Night in Ottawa for Apex Championship Fighting, you got into it with Carlos Newton and stuff. He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, it's too much roids. he goes, that was all my fault. My bad. It was pretty funny. He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, I felt bad about that. Like, it's basically that they ended up partying together later in the night. It was just one of those, funny moments. But, all right, so let's get into Wednesday's fight card, Joey. What do you think about this one? We got Anthony Smith is the main event against Glover Teixeira. And the number surprises me a little bit. I think that Smith is the right favorite. But FanDuel's got him at minus 184. Smith is 4-1 in his last fights, five fights. The low loss was to John Jones, including a win against Alexander Gustafsson. Smith is one of these guys, and he's not great, but he finds a way to win fights, and you got to give him credit for that. Teixeira's on a 3-fight win streak, comes in 4-1 in his last 5 as well. Got a 40-year-old against a 31-year-old. Teixeira's 40 years old. Smith is 9 years younger. What do you make of this fight, Joey?
Well, Smith, not that the number matters, but Smith is like 5-0 as a favorite in UFC. He's a favorite here. Whether that continues, I go all the way back to when he fought Lombard. I mean, it's amazing what that win would do for somebody. He fought Lombard, and then he lost to Santos. Then, he beat a couple guys that, again, whose best years were behind them, and Evans and Hua. He beat Volkan. He was a dog against Volkan. He showed up. Then he got in against John Jones. So, his career, I don't know if it's because there's not a lot of guys at light heavyweight, not a lot of talent at light heavyweight right now, but he seems to be, have been thrust into the spotlight a little bit here. It's tough, it's tough to bet against him right now. Glover, people have been betting against Glover his last couple of fights. They expected him to be a little, maybe his best year is behind him at 40. But, you know, I'd be 0-5 if I was riding dogs against Anthony Smith to this point, but it's tough for me to bet Anthony Smith. Really is. I mean, he was, you know, he seems to come from behind, but, you know, the other thing is both of these guys, I think, are slow starters, and but Smith seems to close the show a little bit better than Glover. I don't know. You know, it's a tough fight. You know, it's not something that, you know, it's, to me, it's like an undercard fight. I just, something I'd probably pass on. I don't want to say dog or pass, but you know what? I probably, you know, it has to be the dog or nothing here. It's got to be Glover or pass.
I think Anthony Smith wins the fight. I think it's a close one. I'm going to be looking at taking the over in the fight. I think it's going to be a long fight. Now, listen. Anthony Smith won 25 minutes with John Jones. He beat Doug Gustafson in a four-round fight. He stopped him in the fourth. Very impressive. You know, he's a journeyman, but, you know, as you stated, it's hard to believe that he is where he is right now. But I got to give him credit. And I've been riding Glover Teixeira. Texas is a guy that I like to bet on. I got a ton of respect for him. But he's hittable, and he's a little slow right now. You know what I mean? He is slow.
I think he lost to Kirilov. You know, he lost those first two rounds. I think it was the first two rounds. I think he lost two of the three rounds against Kirilov, and he got that split decision. You know, this might be another case where I talk myself out of it while I'm on the air like I did with Stevens last week. But no, it's tough for me to bet Anthony Smith. I can't lay a number on him, even though, like I said, he's 5-0 in his last five as a favorite.
All right, what do you make? We got about 6-7 minutes left here, Joey, so let's blast through the rest of the card. What do you make of Ben Rothwell and OSP? I think this fight's probably a boring fight, and it's plus 156 to go the distance. That's something I'm going to be rolling the dice with. I think this fight goes the distance. In fact, four or five of Rothwell's last five fights have actually gone the distance.
He beat your man Struve. He beat Struve.
Yeah, I know.
His last fight.
Okay. What do you make of this one?
I don't know. You know, OSP up in weight, whether it affects his cardio and speed, I don't know. But, Rothwell should be able to bully him around a bit. It's going to be a tough fight. You know, here's a split decision kind of fight. It goes to decision. I'd have to side with Rothwell. I mean, I'm not in love. Here again, you know, there's so many unknowns with St. Preux going up. Rothwell's looked so bad, though. I mean, look, he lost Arlovski, one of the few guys Arlovski's beat in his last, like, 15 fights. I no shame in Ivanov and Junior Dos Santos. But you know what? You look at those fights and you say, well, St. Preux's not going to stop him. And there's a huge weight, advantage here for Rothwell. I mean, God, he's going to have probably 40-some pounds on St. Preux. So it's tough. Rothwell might be able to bully him around. The number's right. You know, St. Preux's, what, about $1.45?
Yeah, you know, I'm always wrong with Rothwell. You know, there's just these fighters that I never get a good read on. I'm not a big fan of his. I got nothing against him personally. He's a tough guy, but he's hard to trust, as you stated. You know, he's been around forever. He's been in a million fights. He's slow. And OSP's all right, but OSP's not great, right? He's resilient. He's tough. I'm betting plus 156 for this fight to go the distance because I think OSP – is just going to sort of dance around and try to avoid a power shot. OSP is minus 146 right now. Rothwell is plus 124. So I guess, you know, this one is a dog or pass. I'm playing, and, you know, I might end up on Rothwell. I'm always wrong with him. But if I take Rothwell plus 124 and the fight to go the distance of plus 156, it's not bad, you know what I mean, especially if Rothwell wins a decision there. Interesting number here, Joe. I was surprised a little bit. Alexander Hernandez is always favored, man. He was even favored against Cowboy Cerrone, and I jumped in. And I took the Cowboy in that fight. But he bounced back with a win against Francisco Trinaldo. After that, he's had a clean camp, actually. He said that he trains with a bunch of Brazilians that didn't care about the virus. That he said his camp was completely normal. And that he's had no issues. He thinks he already had the virus, so he's feeling good now. What do you make of this one? I think could be the fight of the night. This one could be entertaining between Drew Dober and Alexander Hernandez.
Yeah, Dober looks better than ever. Won the five of his last six. I kind of like Hernandez here. So I've got one loss since 2013. That was the Cowboy. You know, I think he'll be able to grind out a decision.
Yeah, it was kind of a learning experience, right? You know, sort of he's fighting an older guy. And I thought, you know, I didn't think it was a great spot for him against Cowboy, too. I think it might have been in Texas, too.
You know?
Yeah, it was in his hometown.
A lot of pressure.
San Antonio, Texas at the time. Here's a fighter, Joe. He's 2-5 in his last seven fights. 2-5 in his last seven fights. But come on, man. Thiago Moises is a guy. They're giving him a guy that he should be able to win here. Michael Johnson, -114. What do you think about Michael Johnson? If he doesn't win,
you jump down to the ESPN prelims. That's on the prelims, isn't it?
Yeah. You know what? I jumped to that one because I liked it. We only got a couple of minutes left. And you know what? I like Ricky Simon as well against Ray Borg.
I like Ricky Simon, too.
Yeah, you like Ricky Simon?
Yeah, I think he's bigger, bigger. You know what? You know what's funny? I was looking at you think Ray Borg would be old. You know, Ray Borg's only 26 years old.
Yeah, it feels like he's been around forever.
Yeah, I mean, looks like he's got miles on him. And then Ricky Simon's older than him. Ricky Simon's 27. You know, that's just one thing that jumped out at me. You know, it's meaningless, but I thought that was interesting.
One thing that catches my eye about that fight, as you mentioned, Ray Borg is good, but he's good enough just to sort of lose this fight. I think it's an uphill climb for him. Ricky Simon's a good fighter. 2 inches taller. He's going to have a 6-inch reach advantage on Ray Borg. I'll tell you what, for total bettors, if you like this fight to go the distance, is -240, yes. But 9 straight fights have gone the distance for Ray Borg, and Ricky Simon, 8 of his last 9 fights have gone the distance for you parlay players. All right, Joey, so we got about a minute and a half or left door or so before the bell rings. So what else? Anything else on this card catch your eye?
Vettori should be able to get past Robertson. I think Lynch, how about Lynch coming over from the PFL? You know, made his million or whatever, made his 400,000 after taxes and trainers, and if he was lucky. But Lynch is coming over after winning that PFL championship fighting Arlovsky. When Arlovsky's won 3 of his last 13 fights. Just going by that alone, I mean, I gotta take a shot on Lynch. Eubanks, nothing there. Good fight, Benitez against this Venezuelan kickboxer. Oh, you know what's good on this undercard is this Hunter Azor against Kelleher. I think Azor will beat him. He's a wrestler. He's out of Montana, 8-0. He went to Montana State or something like that, Northern Montana University. I don't know. But his wife just had a kid on April 10th. So I don't know how that's going to affect him. But yeah, I think that Hunter Azor gets it done there on the undercard.
-168, Hunter Azor. I'll definitely be on that. We've got a lot of positive feedback. It's great to have you back on the show, Joey. And it's great to have fight cards. We'll speak later in the week because we have another fight card coming up in a couple of days. Then we'll jump on later in the week with Joey Odessa. But we want to talk UFC Fight Night with him. Joey, it's always a pleasure, my man. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Hey, thanks, G. Have a good one.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Rich, Sports Grid, Renzi Unfiltered, the podcast continues. Let's do this thing. Thanks to Joey Odessa for joining us on the program. Talks of UFC 249, and of course we have UFC Fight Night 31 on ESPN or ESPN+. We've got a card on Wednesday. We've got another card this weekend. We've got German soccer returning this weekend. We've got NASCAR this weekend. We've got Skins game, actually. Rory and Dustin take on Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolf. As well. So the sports talk, it gets busier on a week-by-week basis. Let's bring in Babano right now. What's going on, Babano? How you doing?
Yeah, good to be with you, Gabe. We talked about it last time I was on. A few sports are starting to come back, and it's going to give bettors a few more options than they've had the last 2 months.
Yeah, how did the UFC treat you on Saturday? It was great to have it back. And you know what? I made 9 plays. I went 5-4. And, you know, I had some plus money picks in there, but I also laid juice with some picks. So it was amazing, Babano. After all that, I bet 9 fights, I lost $13. So I didn't win or didn't lose. Like, I literally, and I wasn't betting like 10 bucks a fight either. It's amazing that it ended up like that. I literally ended up like, I can't say I broke even. I lost $13. And I bet 9 fights, 9 bets. And I ended up, breaking even. But I look forward to Wednesday's card. How'd you do on Saturday?
Yeah, I got involved in the majority of fights. I mean, I suffered from a little bit of overexcitement and just so happy to see UFC back, live sports back.
That's your way of saying you didn't do great.
Yeah, well, you know what? It was actually going to be a losing night for me until the main event. And
Gaethje.
Fortunately for me, Justin Gaethje, and I snagged a plus 185 with the price on him. In that main event, and he ended up getting the job done and really controlling and dominating Tony Ferguson. I mean, I give Ferguson a ton of credit, Gabe, for just getting to the 5th round. I mean, that guy's skin and face was raw hamburger meat at the end of that fight. He was just taking a beating from Justin Gaethje, but it was very impressive from Gaethje, although I know Alex B. Smith, good friend of mine, good UFC bettor, we were talking about this. Tony Ferguson was hurt from having to cut weight twice. You know, in back-to-back months, I think it slowed him down. He did not look like he brought his A game to that fight. I don't want to take anything away from Gaethje, but to me, that was also part and parcel, the fact that Ferguson had to cut weight twice, had to do it last month, then had to do it all over again, and he didn't look like that same fighter this time. But props to Gaethje, obviously fully deserving of the victory in the interim lightweight championship win on Saturday.
Yeah, we should note, though, and, you know, he talked about it, and he clearly did overtrain. You could tell, like, that was a problem, the overtrade. And I was a little bit concerned by him training for as long as he did. But he made weight for April 18th. He didn't have to. The card was canceled. You know what I mean? It was canceled earlier in that week. He made weight anyways, and he posted it online. And, you know, that was just taxing on his body. Listen, Gaethje was the better fighter. It is what it is. Gaethje was a freaking monster. So we have another card on Wednesday. It, you know, sort of snuck up on people. People put so much research into the into Saturday's card, and then boom, there's another one. Not as star laden. Anthony Smith is the main event. We talked about it with Joey Odessa. It's tough. You know, listen, I think Anthony Smith is the right favorite, but should he be minus 184? No. You know, I think he's too big of a favorite, but I think he wins the fight. It's a tough fight card, this one. I've got some spots I'm going to be looking at here. I like Alexander. I like Hernandez at plus 100. I was a little bit surprised that he was an underdog, a small dog there. Joey was talking about Andre Arlovsky. And listen, Arlovsky's like 3-10 in his last 13 fights, right? So, you know, if you don't overthink things, Linz is minus 156 there. It'll be a fun fight card. I'm going to roll the dice on OSP and Ben Rothwell going the distance at plus 156. As well. That's something I'm going to be taking a look at here.
Yeah, Wednesday's card. I'm with you on Smith. I think Lionheart Smith gets the job done. I mean, you look at his last couple fights. Really, he's been actually facing some pretty good opponents. Ozdemir, John Bones Jones, and Gustafson, his last 3 fights. And Glover Teixeira, I don't want to say he's is on a downward slide a little bit, but he was certainly trending that way. He is off 3 straight wins, but I think the competition is going to get tougher for him here against the younger Anthony Lionheart Smith, and I think he'll be able to get the job done. I think Glover Teixeira, if I'm not mistaken, Gabe, he's right around 40, is he not? So I think that's going to be a little bit of a concern for him going into that fight. I'm tempted by Rothwell, plus 125. I mean, he's a very tough fighter to figure out. He's had some head-scratching decisions and performances, but, you know, as a dog, I'm kind of interested there. I actually kind of like Drew Dober in that fight against Hernandez. It's just because Drew Dober's a young fighter that I caught on early on, that this guy's got some potential. He had a tremendous knockout victory last time out, and he was a big dog in that fight against Nasrat in his last fight, UFC 246. Maybe I'm falling victim to the fact that, you know, I cashed a big underdog win with him there to go back with him here. But
if he made money for you, yeah.
Up and comer. Yeah, so I'll tell you that.
That fight, I think, is probably going to be the fight of the night. Like what it said, like as far as two dudes, like, yeah, going at it and stuff. Hernandez is very active. Dober is, as you stated, a very active fighter on a 5-1 run right now in his last six fights. Hernandez, 11-2. In his career, 3-1 in the UFC, his one loss to Cowboy Cerrone, who, you know, and he was favored in that fight too. It was kind of a tough spot for him. There was a lot of pressure on him, and Cowboy's still a wily guy. So now he's fighting someone in his age group here. Fun fight, and it could go either way. I mean, that's why the number is what it is, right? Minus 116 and plus 100 right now. But it's nice to have the UFC back. It's nice to have a sport to bet on. Like Korean baseball, I'll bet on it a bit, but I'll put bigger money on a UFC fight. And I don't, you know, I don't want to put $200 on a, I don't want to put $200 on a Korean baseball game, but I'll put $200 on a UFC fight.
I wouldn't be doing that either, Gabe. So I'm with you there.
I played the first night of Korean baseball. I went 1-3 and I tapped out after. I was like, ah, screw that. I don't need the headache. You know what I mean?
I hear it.
I don't need the headache. So I see you on Twitter. You know, I'm a big Seinfeld fan. And a lot of people like him in The King of Queens, too. I always was thrown off by him being the father again. I'm like, nah, he's Frank Costanza. But Jerry Stiller passes away. So many great moments. You know, he really was. Like, if you think of Seinfeld, a lot of the classics, you know, the Festivus and, you know, the Feats of Strength. The Jay Buhner scene was great. How did you train Jay Buhner? 30 home runs, 100 RBIs. He's got a rocket for an arm. Probably the best one for me, the most memorable, if I think of one of his episodes and the bits, was we're going to be in the pool. We're going to be on the shuffleboard court and the whole Del Boca Vista. You're telling me there's not one available condo in Del Boca Vista. And I saw a blooper reel once. It took them, man. It took them like 10 times to do that scene. Like, he kept on stumbling through the Del Boca Vista stuff, and he was so funny, everyone else couldn't stop laughing. Like, so they had to do it over again because Estelle would start laughing in real life, or, like, the guy that plays Jerry's father would start laughing. Because he was just that funny in real life. Like, it wasn't just funny. Like, they were laughing. They had to, like, do it over again because they were like, oh, man. Estelle started laughing there when he was doing it. Like, and if you notice, on the final take, next time you see it, she's grinning a bit. Like, she's fighting it, bro. And as funny as you only see it when you know it now, because they have to redo it a bunch of times because she kept laughing.
You know what's funny, Gabe? There's so many scenes in Seinfeld where the scene's about to cut, and you just see the actor, Jerry, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Jason Alexander, Michael Richards, it didn't matter who, or even someone else, you'd see them smiling because they were really having a hard time keeping it all in and not cracking. You know, while they were taping the scene. I mean, you could tell.
That's what makes it funny. Yeah. Saturday Night Live does it where it can become too much. If people are, like, laughing during the bit, you got to get through the bit to make it good. But you're right. A lot of times you can tell, like, at the end of the scene, Jerry's holding it in. Like, he's got to start laughing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because Kramer's just too funny in real life. And imagine doing, like, a scene with Stiller, man, like, with the bra and stuff, like. Like, I know that one took them a few times because Seinfeld was laughing too hard at them. You know, he's just one of these guys, sort of like Rodney Dangerfield. It's just funny. He's he's one of those dudes you just almost laugh when you just look at him.
Yeah, it's a great point. You look at him, you hear him. And you just laugh. He had a great run as obviously Frank Costanza. He was really good on King of Queens. That's a show I like as well. Arthur Spooner, he was good in that role. And I was worried at the beginning too, maybe it was too much of a carbon copy of the Frank Costanza character, but Arthur Spooner was like a slightly lighter, gentler version of Frank, but he was still the agitated father figure type of role on King of Queens. But obviously he's going to be most known for Frank Costanza. I mean, you look at the one of the clips I retweeted, Julia Louis-Dreyfus can't keep it together in the scene at the police office there, trying to get George out of trouble for being a bootlegger. I know. He said, what the hell does that mean? You know, and you hear that, you're saying, you want a piece of me? I mean, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus just can't keep a straight face through it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, she's been on Saturday Night Live. She's a really funny woman in real life too, right? Her show Veep is funny. So like, she's been in a lot of comedic scenes and kept it together. And I saw that too. She told the story about how during that scene she couldn't keep it together. Like, it was just too funny. He said, "You want a piece of me?" She's really good too. Like, she was actually like, he's like the best actor on the show. Stiller was. Like, Seinfeld's not a great actor. He wasn't a great actor. Kramer was really good at what he did, but Kramer was kind of a failure before that in real life. And he was after, actually. So it was weird. So he just sort of nailed Kramer. Jason Alexander was really, really good too. But like, Elaine was like the slickest one. Like, she really, if you notice just in the show, she sort of nails her role the most. Like, often, like, she's just in a zone all the time. She, like, her facial expression, she's so damn good. When she says, "I'll drop you like a bag of rocks," what she says to Costanza, great.
"I'll drop you like a bag of dirt," yeah.
Yeah, like a bag of dirt, yeah.
The kitchen scene with Frank and Estelle, funny too, and he goes back into cooking after the Korean War. Your meatloaf is mushy, your salmon croquettes are oily, and your eggplant parmesan is a disgrace to this house. Well, that's too bad, because I'm the only one who cooks around here. Not anymore. Give me that spatula. I'm back, baby. I mean, great scene. Just great memories. I mean, Jerry Stiller, I don't think anyone else could do Frank. Like, he just made it his, and I think that's what people will remember the most.
Well, they actually had.
Great comedic timing he had, too.
They actually had someone else as the father originally in the early episodes.
You're right. John Randolph, in the first time they introduced the Frank character, played Frank. And then they made the change right after that first episode that they introduced Frank with John Randolph. And it was probably one of the best decisions they ever made, looking back on it.
Yeah, you know what's whacked? I think they made a few. And you know what? Seinfeld's father changed, too, in the original ones.
Morty, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's whacked out, though, because you know the scene where Frank freaks out and he's got to become his butler. And he slaps him in the head there on the forehead. He's like, "You idiot." He hits him.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I want these shoes." Yeah. He goes, "I want these shoes shine. They're not shiny enough." He's going, "You got to go pick up a TV." Remember, like, with the wheelchair. "You got to pick up a TV. You think you're not screwed that up?" That episode, I've seen it with the other father. And it's not nearly as good. Like, the other father was kind of serious and stuff. Like, I don't know if he got ill. Like, that. I don't know, like, what the deal was with that. Another weird thing with Seinfeld, too, if you notice, in early episodes, in weird times, George talks about having a brother. But they never mention him ever again, right? Just sort of a weird thing that I'd throw out there. So I know you noticed Joe Tessitore and Booger McFarland out after a couple of years, Monday Night Football. Listen, Joe Tessitore's a good broadcaster, but he's more suited for college football. He's got a good voice for college football. He gets all into it. And even Booger would be good for college. I think Booger would be good for the NFL studio show as well. They're both, Booger's still going to be part of the coverage of ESPN's NFL, whatever shows. And Tessitore still does boxing and will do college football. But, you know, it's a good move. People don't tune in because of the broadcasters. They tune in because of the games. But nevertheless, finally ESPN admitted that it's not working.
And I don't think I've ever seen a broadcasting announcement, broadcasting change announcement get the publicity and the attention and the tweets on Twitter that this one has. It's because everyone wanted to see it. It was basically the wish of every NFL fan that was watching the product for the last couple of years, that they wanted a change at Monday Night Football booth. They wanted Tessitore gone, and they wanted Booger gone. Booger got a lot more a negative criticism than Joe, but my problem with Joe was he made the 10-yard run make it sound like it's the greatest 10-yard run in the history of the sport. I mean, just over dramatic.
Can you believe it?
Leaping through there, and then he'd hold the void. Like, it's just, whereas Pat Summerall, we grew up in the days, Gabe, where Pat Summerall's just making it sound nice and similar. Andre Rison into the end zone, touchdown. You know, you'd hear that Pat Summerall just nice and simple. Don't overdo it. Don't
blow your top.
Testator is the modern Syracuse. He went to Boston College, but it's a very ESPN. Like, he does, he put it this way. Joe Testator got that job because he did everything that his bosses wanted him to.
Yep.
And I'm not saying, like, oh, he's a kiss ass. I mean, his enthusiasm, his voice, he just sort of, like, kind of is what, like, ESPN likes in a broadcaster. Except it was just a little too cornballish and over the top for NFL football. He just wasn't the right guy. Doesn't mean he's not a good announcer. That's the whole thing, too, because everyone's always going to rip them and stuff. Hey, listen, Booker's a smart guy. Right? Booker's Super Bowl champion, smart guy, you know, knows football. He's just not a lead analyst.
I didn't dislike Booger as much as other people did, Gabe. I didn't dislike him as much as other people did.
He's a smart guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. You got to realize that people would be in better roles, better situations, right? Just and now it looks like Booger's out, but it looks like the fans want – we've only got a minute left here, but it looks like the fans want Lewis Riddick. That's the big push. People wanted Lewis Riddick on last time. I think, you know, people are going to be upset if Lewis Riddick doesn't get the job this time around. And it's interesting because Lewis Riddick is not a household name, right? He's not a household name. But he's well-respected in the football world. He's well-respected by fans. People like him. And he's very smart. He was a player personnel guy before he played. He was a player personnel guy. So, he's got insight to the game. But he's not a household name, so it'll be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if he's part of the team, Urbano, but, you know, maybe they're waiting on a Drew Brees. They swung and missed on Peyton Manning. You know, they got to find the right chemistry. They can't screw this thing up every couple of years, but we got to get out of here.
They swung and missed on Drew Brees too, Gabe, because he signed with NBC Sunday Night Football after he retires to broadcast there.
Yeah, and, you know, exactly. Well, yeah, I don't know, that's not really official. Not really official. At least I don't believe it was official. But you're right. He could be losing out there. We got to get out of here. Great stop, Urbano.
See you, Gabe.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.